You're listening to A Conduit's Diary. This is a podcast about me, Rachel, and my experiences as I investigate paranormal activity as a conduit. This is rated R for explicit because I do have a little bit of a foul mouth. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you listen to it. Let's get right into episode 44, Dreams. They were standing over me. I couldn't see them, but I could feel them as I tried to claw my way out of my dream. Or was it a nightmare? I wasn't sure at this point. I just knew that I'd somehow dropped between our world and their world while sleeping. It wasn't the first time. When I was a kid, I had dreams I was wandering the other side. It looked like our side, but milky, like a film of dirt had settled over it. The air smelled like must and cobwebs, and my skin felt like I eternally had a sheen of sweat on it. Usually, I could pull myself out of this place. It was unnatural for me to be here, and my entire body knew it. It wanted nothing more than to return to where it knew I belonged. This time, though, it was like I was anchored. Something was holding onto my neck and forcing my head underwater, refusing to let me come up for air. It stood over my bed now, watching. Something was off. I'd known it for weeks. My time away from ghost hunting and helping others with their otherworldly problems meant I could step back in and see just how changed it was. What was the saying about the frog and the boiling water? Would I have boiled to death by not acknowledging the changes? Or was being dropped in here now the tipping point? I was in my bedroom, but I was also not. The air was thicker than I remembered. The milky film was more blue-black than before, painting my room in dark streaks of dripping goo. The ground pulsated with it, like something much deeper was trying to crawl its way out of the ground. They sat on a chair across from my bed, watching me curiously. All the creatures that lived here were curious of the humans, of the living. It's why they so frequently tried to get to our side. It's why they pantomimed humans when they did so, instead of staying in their true, horrific forms. This one didn't bother to disguise what it was with a friendly human face. It probably wanted to see me flinch. "What do you want?" I rasped, trying not to be worried about how deeply I was in this world. I didn't want it to know I was terrified that it had reached me in my sleep, in my own home. This was supposed to be a safe place. I needed to reinforce the wards and hopefully tell this thing off so it didn't try again. "You're hard to reach," it said. It was more a shadow than a structured form, an ink blot sitting in a chair. Sometimes I could see a mouth, sometimes I could see eyes swirling in the midst of its not face. It was incomprehensible, so I stopped trying to make sense of it. If I focused too hard, I had a feeling my mind would never be the same. "I prefer email," I told it, sitting up in my bed. On the surface, I could feel its claws digging into me, forcing me down. "And I don't appreciate threats," I added. "Not a threat," it said, though its tone was playful. I didn't appreciate the sudden cat and mouse situation I'd gotten myself into. "Well, you've reached me. What do you want?" I hissed. I was toying between lurching at it to get it to let me go and just hearing it out, hoping it end up letting me go when it was done. I wasn't so naive to think it wouldn't hurt me in the end. "Since he was cut off from his power source, there's been a shift," it said. "Let me guess, you want me to help it again?" I asked, rolling my eyes. I was finally free of the demon that trapped me in an impossible bargain when I was too young to know better, and now it was sending its friends to threaten me? "No," it said suddenly, stern, a command. "We are better without it. I'm warning you of what happens if you continue to meddle." "I'm not the one meddling. I just send things back where they belong," I replied. The gall, honestly. To say I was the problem when they were the ones dipping into the realm of the living to possess or toy with humans. Lately, I'd been mostly involved in hauntings, spirits that needed something to help them cross. What the hell did it have to do with this thing? They're just escaping, it said simply. And causing problems in the meantime. I'm not going to stop helping people, I shot back. It shrugged, or whatever semblance of a shrug it could do. Do as you must. Just remember my warning. By then, I'd wrested some of my consciousness back from the thing, managing to push my way out of the dream and back into my body. Maybe it finally let me go. Maybe I finally got myself out of it. Who knew? All I knew was I was finally awake and in my bed, staring at my ceiling as the morning sun painted it a warm gold. Next to my bed, my phone was ringing. The ringtone I assigned Harry. I groaned and rolled over, feeling every muscle in my body protest. I'm sure I'd been thrashing in an attempt to get away from that thing. I didn't bother to look around my bedroom. I knew it would be empty. Something like that was impossible not to feel to your bones. What? I rasped into the phone. Jesus, you're a heavy sleeper. I've been calling you all morning, Harry said. I glanced at the clock next to my bed. 9 a.m. Hardly all morning. The man needed a hobby. Okay, well, I'm up now. What do you want? I asked, as if there were many different reasons for him to call. I got a case. Can you be up and ready in 30? I considered this. My body felt like I'd run a mile. I'm not a runner. And it was clear whatever sleep I got wasn't exactly restful. Sure, I said instead, pushing Petunia off the bed to get ready. Some guard dog you are, I told her. An hour later, I was in Harry's ridiculous sports car and blazing through the freeway to whatever destination he had in mind. Harry was a true Arizonian. The speed limit was more of a suggestion than anything else. His ugly-ass sports car clocked 90 in the HOV lane down the 10, not slowing for any curve or bend. I'm sure we can be a few minutes late, I told him with a scowl, my fingers firm around the oh shit bar. Harry looked confused. We're not meeting anyone. I'm taking you to the place. The place. That was never a good sign. The more Harry and I worked together, the more I appreciated his approach to my involvement. I never had to meet families unless I wanted to, and most of the time he let me do things my way. If I had to look into the face of some grieving mother or father, I don't think I could have managed. It was bad enough to see the level of suffering at the animal rescue. I didn't need to add human suffering to it. The place, it turned out, was a small neighborhood park on the outskirts of downtown Phoenix. The downtown area had morphed considerably over the years. I remember going to prom my senior year downtown and being told not to walk to my car unattended. I was also told certain streets would spell my untimely death. Now, downtown Phoenix was probably the only walkable part of the entire state, and that was generous. In midday, it was packed with a mix of people attending some convention at the convention center, some people mulling about the arena for a concert, and a whole lot of 21-year-olds getting wasted. Damn, I said, watching the chaos on the streets as we drove through it. Yeah, I hate these one-way streets, Harry said, misunderstanding me. I didn't bother to correct him. We stopped on the edges of downtown, where he parked on the street. Got any change, he asked me, eyeing up the meters. No, just use an app, I told him. An app? He scoffed. Yeah, you're a millennial. Don't act like you don't know how to use a smartphone, I shot back. This caused him to grumble about needing an app to start your car and enter your house, which I promptly tuned out. I personally liked that I could check in on my foster cats from my phone and unlock the door to my house if need be. Keys could be replicated, entry codes deleted in seconds. This way, Harry said at last, pocketing his phone with too much force. I followed him down the street into a park with a few tents set up around the edges. He stopped at one of the tents, hesitating. Hello, he called, reaching out on the canvas to knock on it as though it were a door. I suppressed a laugh. A woman poked her head out from the tent and eyed us up. What do you want? She asked me, ignoring Harry. I didn't blame her. He looked like some off-duty cop. He wore boots, denim jeans, a t-shirt that didn't quite fit him, and those ridiculous visor sunglasses. Ask him, I said, jerking my head to Harry. She sighed and started to enter her tent again. "Wait," he said, stopping her. "I'm here for Rose. I was told this was the place." The woman regarded him with even more suspicion, if that were possible. "What about Rose?" she asked. "I've been hired to look into her death," he added. The woman shook her head with a laugh. "I bet you were. You want to come look at where the body was found, too? Pay your respects." She said the last part like a taunt. "Just point me in the general direction and we'll find it," he told her. "What about the others? You gonna look into them too?" the woman pressed. Harry's lips flattened into a line. "Oh, so you do know about them. Very interesting." She paused before considering me again. "All right, just let me get some things together." The woman introduced herself as Helga and said she'd been in the area for about 3 years. "How long did you know Rose?" Harry asked. Helga paused to think, then nodded. "A few months. She turned up just as it started to cool down, needed a place to sleep. She'd been kicked out of the usual places, the parks and benches downtown. Saw our encampment and joined up with us." "Did she have any friends? Enemies?" Harry pressed. Helga rolled her eyes. "Ask your buddies at the force. They already been through here," she said. "I'm not a cop," Harry told her, a little too annoyed. "Oh, I know, but you all talk to each other, I'm sure," Helga said dismissively. "They hate him," I told her conspiratorially. That earned a death glare from Harry and a delighted laugh from Helga. "That's so. Well, no and no. Rose kept to herself, disappeared sometimes for a few days, then came back. Thought she had a boyfriend or a job or something she would go to. It wasn't until she was missing for a few days anyone noticed. And by then, the jogger found her." Helga waved her hand to a spot hidden from the view of the park. It dipped down to a fence where a single bouquet of flowers sat to mark the place where Rose had died. "A jogger?" Harry asked skeptically. Helga shrugged. "A lot of people run the hills in the park. Who knows? I don't run. Do you need anything else?" "So you don't know if she had friends, enemies, where she disappeared to?" Harry pressed. Helga shook her head. She kept her distance. It's not like we were close. And with that, she turned to leave us. "Well," Harry said, motioning to the spot, "do your thing." "I need more than that," I protested. Mostly I was curious, but a little information about the dead woman wouldn't hurt. After my dream, I was hesitant to dip into that space for longer than necessary. "Rose Hendricks, 22 years old, reported missing 6 months ago, found dead here a month ago," Harry clipped. "Missing?" I asked. Harry shrugged. "Her parents hired me, said the cops couldn't find her when she went missing. Something about her being too old for them to really care. She'd just gotten a new job, the usual song and dance. For some reason, she ended up here, then was found dead. Signs of foul play. Police attributed it to street crime, you know, explained it away. Her parents don't like the answer." "But there are others," I pressed. "A few, in similar circumstances. It's why they were so quick to dismiss it, since those were related to street crimes and violence." This was sounding an awful lot like an episode of Criminal Minds. "But you think there's more to it?" I pressed. Harry shrugged, his lips pressing into that thin line again. I sighed and trudged over to the flowers, kneeling by them. There was no other evidence that anything happened here. No crime tape, no bloodstains, nothing. It had been clean and shoved away like it never happened. "I'll give you some space," Harry said, disappearing down the ridge into the park. "All right, Rose," I said quietly, closing my eyes to try to focus. The slimy feel of the other side slipped over my skin, making me shiver. I shoved it down in favor of focusing on Rose, whoever she was, wherever she was. When I opened my eyes, I wasn't alone. Kneeling next to the flowers was a woman, her fingers gently playing over the petals. "Rose?" I asked. Her head jerked back to look at me, eyes wide. She stood quickly, as if she were going to run away. "Wait," I cried, hoping to God she didn't run. If she did, I'd lose her and have to start all over again because we all know I'm no athlete. She paused and turned, looking me over. "You can see me?" she asked, incredulous. I nodded, thankful she decided to stay. "Yeah, I kind of summoned you here." "Like a genie?" she asked, the start of a wry smile on the corner of her lips. I mean, I just want you to answer some questions, so maybe, I offered with a shrug. Right, Rose said, turning to lean against the chain link fence. She tilted her head and gave me a once over. Ask away. Do you know you're dead? I asked. She straightened, the wry smile falling off her face. I was worried she'd bolt again. Look, I know you are. That's why I'm here. Your family paid someone to investigate your death. Sounds like they came up empty-handed, so... I waved my hands around, showing that I was the one they ended up with. So you're a private detective? She asked. She seemed less flighty now, but still pretty upset I brought up that she was dead. No, I just work with one. I'm more of a medium, I offered. Conduit is the thing that the others on the other side call me. It wasn't an easy thing to explain. Medium just felt like it fit better to the general public. Huh, she said, pushing off the chain link fence to encircle me slowly. So I'm dead, and you can see me, and my parents care enough to send someone. Must have cost a pretty penny. I thought of my share and shrugged, noncommittal. What good will it do for them to know? She asked. I'm surprised, honestly. I thought they'd just milk it for all they could. They're that way, you know. When I left, it wasn't so much a choice on my part as a necessity. At 22, I was still their captive. I didn't have a good enough job to afford a car so I could get a better job, and they didn't help. Sabotaged at every corner. They wanted me to live with them forever, to never marry, to be their perfect child. She shuddered. So you left? I asked. She shrugged. Anything was better than what they offered. At least out here I had some freedom. I could buy the food I want, visit the people I wanted, get any job I wanted. I'm not saying it was glamorous. I'm just saying, well, it was a temporary solution that wasn't much worse than what I've been a part of. But now you're dead, I said. There's no freedom in that. I suppose, she said with a shrug. I never really lived either. So what? You just walked to this chain fence and decided you'd had enough and simply died? I pressed. She rolled her eyes. No, I got killed by that asshole Murray. He's always trying to hire girls to run things for him. Says he'll pay enough to get you out. The problem is, he's a liar. He keeps all his girls so short they can't get out. Meanwhile, he lives in a house and all that shit. He takes advantage of people, and I wasn't about to be one of them. Does Murray have a last name? I asked. She shrugged. His address is redacted. That's where he lives. He'd try to get me to help him a few times, said it'd be worth it. But I knew it wasn't, so I just ignored him. I was starting to do my own thing. I found a job at a center down the street. I went to classes to learn how to do all the things my parents never let me learn, like file taxes and balance checkbooks. I was even learning to cook sometimes. I brought a few other girls with me, figured we could strike out together. I'm guessing he didn't like that, I offered. She shook her head. Nah, he didn't. He followed me from the center that night, threatened me. I didn't have enough sense to realize he was serious. Any witnesses? I asked. She shrugged. People tend to ignore us out here. I'm not the first girl, and I won't be the last. I think he's done it before. The way he watched me die? She shivered. Maybe this will stop him? I offered. She shrugged. Sure, they'll lock him up now that he took some nice family's baby girl. What about all the others? She shook her head and leaned back against the chain link fence, tilting her head to the sky. There will always be another bad man. This just leaves space for him to step in. Harry called his contact immediately after I told him about Murray, including the address. I couldn't help but think about what Rose said, about another bad man always wanting to step in. When did it end? Both here and on the other side. I cut one demon off from his power supply, allowing another to step in. Now I was being threatened to mind my own business, to keep away from it all. If they kept me from meddling, I'd lose my business and the only income that really supports me. I'd have to get a real job and abandon the rescue, which wasn't something I was interested in. There's only so many fake ghosts I can exercise before I become obsolete. I took out one big baddie. Why couldn't I take out the rest? A Conduit's Diary is created by me, written and produced by me, mixed horribly and edited by me. Cover art created by BMC Design on Fiverr. Music, intro and outro, created by Chris Hornberger.